The date is December 21st, 1990, and we're watching Kindergarten Cop. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the John Kimball to my Phoebe O'Hara.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
And today, we are completing our Astoria trilogy that we last talked about in our Short Circuit episode, so we decided to welcome back a guest that was petitioned by one of our reviewers on Apple Podcasts to return as a regular guest. Please welcome back Joel Sims.
Hello, hello. My name is Joel Sims, aka the Dominic to your guys's, detectives. That's me, swooping in here.
Yeah, you are definitely a youngin compared to us.
Yeah, I'm a child that you get to, traumatize in the same way that, Phoebe and Arnold, who I won't be referring to him as John Kimball. Kimball or Arnold, I think.
Yeah, okay.
There's no way.
Yeah, I wrote his name as John a bunch of times for my 60-second synopsis, and it just felt wrong.
So now, Joel, we gave you a few options of movies that you wanted to do, and you had told me that you've never seen Kindergarten Cop before now.
No, never in its entirety. I remember some of the quotes from the films. People used to do those, like, prank calls.
Okay, yeah.
In the good old days, they'd do the prank calls, and they'd just be like, "Who's your daddy? What does he do?" And, like, I knew that, but other than that, it was completely foreign to me. And let me tell you, what a ride this one was. What a ride. What a trip. From start to finish.
Yeah, I know It's Not a Tumor was definitely a highly quoted line for a long time.
Oh, classic. Yeah. It was one of those things where, like, when I heard it, I was like, that's the one. That's the one right there.
Yeah. There it is, yeah.
I feel like it's probably one of Arnold's most famous lines after. I mean, there's I'll be back. Hasta la vista, baby.
Get to the chopper.
and then right after Get to the Chopper, it has to be It's Not a Tumor.
Oh, yeah, probably. Yeah.
Probably. So this week, we are looking back at December 1990, when the movies in theaters were Edward Scissorhands, Mermaids, Look Who's Talking 2, Captain America, but as we've discussed a few times on this show, not that Captain America, the one from 1990, and of course, our movie for today, Kindergarten Cop, which earned $202 million on a $26 million budget.
I'll maintain that Captain America movie is highly underrated and everybody should watch it. And
absolutely,
one day it should be featured on this podcast.
It very much has to be.
But like all those movies, they are very old. And so if you haven't seen it yet, like Joel had not, and you don't want this movie to be spoiled for you, please hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, well, I have once again found multiples. I found three. First one is, it's a jungle gym out there.
Not a fan.
No.
And not so much. A little weak.
It makes it sound more like, I don't know, that should be like a Tarzan kid movie. Like, yeah. Kid Tarzan movie, maybe, or George of the Jungle.
Like, maybe it was a play on the fact that, like, he was in Predator and he was in the jungle for that, but I don't know. I don't know. That's a reach.
I was just thinking that, like, it's a jungle out there. Right?
Yeah,
that's what it is.
But they added the word gym because, it makes it whimsical.
Yeah, it's the children's audience, but we're strictly cynical viewers and we do not buy into that kind of whimsy. We look at everything with pure scrutiny and nothing else.
Well, next up we have Go Ahead, You Tell Him You Didn't Do Your Homework.
I don't know. I'm not a fan. Like,
yeah, the question that's raised to me is, what homework?
That's true.
He's a kindergarten teacher. What homework?
Yeah.
What homework?
Didn't practice counting to 10.
Some of the kids only have 9 fingers. They couldn't figure it out.
I also feel like they're kind of making a play on, is it Clint Eastwood? The, like, go ahead, make my day.
Oh, yeah, like, man. Dirty Harry?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I get it. He's an action star, but still.
Yeah. Well, okay. Finally, we have, as an undercover cop, he's in a class by himself.
That's the good one.
That's the 90s zinger tagline.
That's the money right there, yeah.
That's the winner.
But they may not be the best descriptions, So let's go to Colin and do a 60-second synopsis.
I'm going to try to do my best trailer voice.
In a world where...
After years of hunting a notorious drug dealer named Cullen Crisp, grizzled LAPD detective John Kimble finally has his chance to put him behind bars. After arresting Crisp for murder, all he has to do is accompany his partner Phoebe to Astoria, Oregon, where she will go undercover as a kindergarten teacher so they can track down Crisp's ex-wife Rachel and offer her immunity in exchange for her testimony. Sounds easy, right? Wrong! When Phoebe catches the flu on the drive over to Oregon, it's up to Kimble to step into the classroom. Will wrangling children prove more difficult than catching criminals? Will John be able to find Rachel before Crisp? Does he have a tumor? Let's find out on this week's episode of I Used to Like This One.
Joel remained silent during that synopsis, but some of the looks on his face were absolutely priceless.
Oh, bravo, truly.
Thank you. Thank you.
So now we know that Joel had no experience other than hearsay and good intentions when it came to this movie. But what about you, Colin? What's your experience with Kindergarten Cop?
I've seen it a few times in my travels around this globe.
Okay.
You know what I mean? A few trips around the sun I've had. It's never been a movie that I've been particularly fond of. It's always just kind of been like an okay movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's not really, this isn't my favorite type of Schwarzenegger.
Okay.
I have real issues with these action stars when they try to do these kids movies.
Yeah.
Like Vin Diesel when he did The Pacifier, or The Rock when he did The Game Plan and The Tooth Fairy.
Yeah.
I mean, this one is a little bit, kind of on this watch, I realize it's not as much as a kids movie as I remember.
Yeah.
But still, it's always been one of those movies that I've just kind of been pretty blah about, to be honest.
Yeah, it's funny that you said that, though, about the kids movie aspect of it. Because, like, it is rated PG-13, and I guess Arnold Schwarzenegger was convinced that they would have made at least $25 million more if it had been less violent.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that, yeah.
The director, Reitman, said that he didn't think that it would hit home as well. He didn't think that the message would get across as well if it didn't have the same amount of violence.
Yeah. And I heard one potential ending was that Kimball was going to die at the end.
He was just going to get shot in the shower. Yeah,
exactly. So, I mean, it could have been even darker, guys. Yeah, this is one of those movies that I loved. I mean, I'm a sucker for funny Arnold Schwarzenegger. I love this. I love Twins. Junior, I can do without. But I do enjoy these movies because when I was younger, Terminator was still a little too old for me, and Predator and Commando and all those. But this was one of those ones that I know for me was my introduction to Arnold Schwarzenegger in a way. You know,
that's
like,
good.
Yeah.
My introduction to Arnold Schwarzenegger was, unfortunately, Batman and Robin.
Oh, snap.
Nice to meet you.
Everything. Freeze. Winterize your pipes. That's my favorite.
Everybody chill.
Yeah.
Well, okay, let's jump into Kindergarten Cop. It's directed by Ivan Reitman, who is the director on Twins, Junior, Dave, but probably best known for Ghostbusters 1 and 2. It's also produced by Ivan Reitman, who produced everything I just mentioned, plus I Love You Man, Road Trip, Euro Trip, Old School. And it's also produced by Brian Grazer, who has 189 producer credits. You quite often see him paired up with Ron Howard. Things like the Da Vinci Code series, the Dr. Seuss live action stuff, Parenthood movie, and the TV show, Arrested Development, and 24.
Yeah, very similar. 24 and Kindergarten Cop. So I understand the parallel. Yeah.
Oh, it's a day in the life.
Absolutely. Au casual.
Yeah. Jack Bauer doesn't take any shit from anybody either. So it's written by Herschel Weingrod and Timothy Harris, who have nearly identical credit lists. We talked about them in Trading Places. They also wrote Brewster's Millions, Twins, Space Jam, My Stepmother is an Alien, and both get based on credits for the sequel to this movie, starring Dolph Lundgren, which I've never seen.
What a classic. I've never seen it, but I read... I'm going to find the synopsis for you, because there was something about the synopsis that I thought was strange. And tells me that the movie is going in a weird direction. This is the synopsis from the Google Play Store. It says, Dolph Lundgren and Bill Bellamy star in the hilarious next chapter of the Arnold Schwarzenegger classic Kindergarten Cop. To recover stolen data in a progressive school, the FBI's toughest agent, Dolph Lundgren, must go undercover on his most difficult assignment yet, teaching a class full of liberal kindergartners. Kindergarten Cop 2 is an action-packed comedy the whole family will love. So this movie is either very, like, I don't even know, like, they seem to really highlight that it's this progressive and liberal.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to hear lines like, boys have a penis, girls have a vagina in that one.
Or classics like, oh, I think he's gay, definitely. He's a kindergarten teacher. He has to be gay.
What year did that come out? Do you have that in front of me?
2016.
Oh, wow, yeah. Okay. We've got one other writer on this movie, Murray Salem, who also gets the story by credit. This and the based on credit for the sequel are his only two credits. So so we open this movie on John Kimble, played by Arnold Schwarzenegger. I don't think I need to list credits. We've already listed half of them. I did read that John Kimble could have possibly been played by Bill Murray, Patrick Swayze, Jack Nicholson, Danny DeVito, Kurt Russell, Robin Williams, or Chuck Norris.
I'm noticing that literally every movie that we watch that's kind of in between 1980 and 1994...
Bill Murray! Yeah!
Could have been Bill Murray.
Yeah! Maybe you should be easier to get a hold of Bill Murray. You could have had some of these great movies.
Yeah, he could have been, you know, he could have been John Kimble. He would have been really believable as the ultra macho, you know? Yeah. Same with, I laughed really hard at Danny DeVito.
He was too short. That's why they didn't cast it. Him. Yeah, he's the same height as the principal, I guess. I don't know.
Damn it. Oh, short King Danny DeVito. It's okay, buddy. You'll get him next time.
But see, like, Patrick Swayze, Jack Nicholson, Kurt Russell, I can picture them being cops. I have trouble with... Oh, and Chuck Norris, because, fuck, it's Chuck Norris. But I have problems with Robin Williams. Robin Williams doesn't make a lot of sense in the action side of things.
Yeah, like, Robin Williams and Bill Murray maybe make sense to me if they were going to really go hard on the kids' movie angle and make it really funny.
Yeah.
You see, I strongly disagree that Robin Williams could not be doing the action scene. Have you seen Mrs. Doubtfire?
Yeah.
When he charges through that restaurant and jumps and slides across the table, I'm...
Well, I guess so,
that's
yeah.
The guy right there.
I mean, he did play Popeye at one point, too, so, gotcha. You know. That's a superhero in himself, as long as he gets his spinach. But yes, we see John Kimble, and he's looking very out of place in a mall, like with his trench coat and his Dwayne Wayne sunglasses. Could he be any more conspicuous?
And his clearly fake 5 o'clock shadow?
That's what I was wondering. I have that in my notes for later, but that's a fake beard, right? Like, that's almost like the moss that you get for, you know, model trains. You get that moss. That's almost what it looks like stuck to his face.
Well, that's what I do on weekends. I'm trying to, you know, impress people at the bars. So, you know. I do a little bit better. I do the moss a little better than he does.
Yeah, right when this movie opened, I was really taken aback by Arnold's 5 o'clock shadow. But then when Crisp comes and you get a load of that ponytail,
ooh,
I was kind of like, whoa.
That's right. That's what he's doing in this mall. He's following this cheesy bad guy with the ponytail, smoking in the mall. And this is Crisp, played by Richard Tyson, who has 152 credits, most of which I don't recognize, but he was in Black Hawk Down. A few Farrelly Brothers movies like Kingpin, Me, Myself, and Irene, and There's Something About Mary. I read that Christian Slater was a possibility for Crisp, but he didn't want to be typecast after Heathers.
Right.
I could see him in that role.
Richard Tyson kind of looks like how... Christian Slater looks in like Mr. Robot, but with higher blood pressure. So
well, see, I don't, I don't know about that though. Like, is it just me, or does this guy look like a cheesy Channing Tatum?
Oh yeah, he does kind of look like Channing Tatum. Yeah,
again, he looks like high blood pressure Channing.
Yeah, Channing Tatum, after he has quit his job at the Magic Mike bar, let himself go a little bit. Yeah. Made all his money in singles, and now he's retired into a life of crime. I've got a third sequel for Kindergarten Cops, guys.
Someone get Channing on the phone. Get him out of here. What's he been doing recently?
I also love the odd choice of Crisp making a wish in the fountain. What did he wish for? I want to... Let's workshop this. What did he wish for in that fountain right now?
A haircut.
And then he goes to the salon and doesn't get it because he gets arrested. He wasn't just there for a manicure.
I feel like he probably wished for his mom to die. They never really go into it, but I feel like there's some deep-seated, like, hatred there that's gone unexplored.
Oh, yeah, he's got major mommy issues.
That's the real villain of the movie.
Yeah.
The real villain of the movie isn't Chris. It's mommy issues with everybody all across the board.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Schwarzenegger is, John Kimball is following him. And I love the moment where he pushes past a woman on the escalator and she calls him a shithead. But then he seems to stop on the escalator instead of continuing to walk down. Like, he literally pushed past her to advance 2 steps.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
He's even more of a shithead now. You did.
What a legend. What an alpha.
So Crisp has a creepy back hallway meeting to get to, complete with mannequins to make it just ramp up that creep factor. And we've got this junky looking guy. He has information on Crisp's family, and he's there waiting for Crisp and hides his girlfriend in a box. And then when Crisp shows up, he tries to get $1,000 for the information. He tells Crisp that his ex-wife looks like $1 million. In fact, she looked like $3 million. And this seems like the wrong joke to tell your bad guy right there. It seems like the wrong time for comedy on this guy's part.
Yeah, going time and place, buddy. You know? You don't work on your quick five at a funeral. You got to know your audience a little bit.
So he tells Crisp, though, where he can find his family, Astoria Elementary School in Astoria, Oregon, and then he gets murdered. And Kimball, who was terrible at tracking his enemy, comes across the scene because after Crisp leaves, the girlfriend freaks out. And I must say, I love the choice of handcuffing the hysterical girl to a dead body.
Yeah.
It was in that moment where I made a note here that I probably have written about 12 times that just says, Arnie's just casually walking around traumatizing people. Like, that's what he does the whole movie. Is he just goes, yeah, I'll handcuff you to the corpse. Don't move. He wouldn't have done like a pipe or anything. He's literally the corpse. Literally the corpse. I don't think he had a warrant to do that.
Well, I did read a fun fact. Handcuffing a witness to a corpse is against regulation in every American police force.
Wow.
See, I love that that needs to be specified. It's been tried before.
Yes! That was exactly where my head went.
I would love it if there was a chart of these arrests, then it was like 1990. It's like handcuffing to corpses peaked. So then the authorities are like, hey, we have to put in policy now to let people know, like, you can't handcuff
them. Nip this in the bud right now.
And we got to go straight to HR on this one. Like,
okay, now, as tempting as it will be, guys, I know you'll want to handcuff someone to a corpse, but HR has been breathing down our necks, and you just can't do that anymore.
I'm putting in my 2 weeks. This is bullshit. It's my 2 weeks right there. I'm gone. Putting in my gun and badge.
What are you talking about? We might as well not handcuff him at all then.
But, you know, before we leave the scene, I'm sure everyone has been asking what kind of box the girlfriend was hiding in. Well, let me tell you, it was a Whirlpool refrigerator box, and you know what that means. Here comes Sponsorship Corner! So, always on the lookout for product placements in movies. I've really been disappointed all month with the lack of products in our movies. This one, though, makes up for it because holy shit, this is a solid one for it. This week, Kindergarten Cop is brought to you by Whirlpool, Depp Hair Gel, Diet Sprite and Coca-Cola, Jim Beam Whiskey and Budweiser Beer, Alaska Airlines, Ford, Chrysler and Suzuki Cars, Radio Flyer Wagons, Little Tykes, Fisher-Price, Crayola, Del Monte Fruit Cups in a Berenstain Bears lunchbox, Guns and Ammo Magazine, the book When We Were Young by A.A. Milne, the movies Animal House and American Graffiti, First Interstate Bank, Tylenol, Benadryl, B&D Rectal Thermometers, Vaseline, and Louisville Slugger. Plus, all the stores in the mall that are shown are Brookstone, The Cobble Shop, Mr. G's Expressions, Bullocks, K Jewelers, and Angle Salon. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
I feel like there's a weird implication behind the fact that the rectal thermometers and the Vaseline and the Louisville Slugger were all listed back to back to back. I'm getting Ivan Reitman on the phone. I'm asking for the meeting.
So Chris reports back to his mom at a beauty salon and is about to get a manicure. But man, he and his mother are just such cheesy characters.
Yeah.
His mother is Eleanor, played by Carol Baker, who has 87 credits. Nothing since 2003. Her first credit was in 1952 in something called Monodrama Theater. But yeah, these two, like, I don't know.
I was going to say that similar... It's funny that the movie is also, like, in Astoria with the Goonies, because they're... very similar to the Fratellis,
a little bit, yeah.
They just don't have the kind of comedic foil, but the mother especially is very similar to,
yeah,
to Mama Fratelli in the Goonies.
Yeah, yes. And similar to the Fratellis, these two definitely have a lot of sexual tension. So
yes, very much so. There is an Oedipal thing happening here.
Yeah.
So Kimball catches up to Crisp, and we get a bit of a standoff between him and mall cops who all have guns for some reason.
It's America.
Okay.
Can you imagine you go to the mall and you skimp them on your Orange Julius and you try to get out there and somebody puts two in your back? Like, protect and serve, you know?
These are the days before observe and report. And while Chris protests that he has a room full of witnesses to his whereabouts, Kimball says, "I have a witness too. It's murder one this time, and you're mine." So we go back to the police station and we see Phoebe O'Hara interrogating the hysterical witness. She's played by Pamela Reed, who was in the Right Stuff, Proof of Life, Bob Roberts, Mr. Bean the Movie, and a lot of TV, including several recurring roles, shows like Parks and Recreation and Jericho. I like the point in this scene, though, with the interrogation where the witness wants to leave and Kimball wants to take over the interrogation. And, like, on either side of the mirror, we get this, like, mirrored sit down in the two separate rooms. I thought it was a great moment.
Yeah.
So ultimately, the witness chooses not to cooperate with the authorities, and so Kimball decides to go try to convince her to help. One of the cheesiest lines in this movie is where he pulls up to whatever this crack den is, and he says to the guys that are standing there, "I forgot to introduce myself. My name is John Kimball, and I love my car." Shook, shook, he cocks his shotgun.
Like, what kind of, like, cowboy outlaw does this guy think he is?
He's still walking around. It's nighttime. He's still got his sunglasses on. Like,
I mean, it is like pre-Rodney King LAPD, so you never know.
Yeah. They're just doing whatever the hell they want. Yeah.
But part of me, too, looks at the car and goes, "Really? You love the car?" Like, I don't know. Come on, Kimball.
I also feel like that scene is strategically placed just so that they can remind the audience that this is the Terminator in a new movie.
A little bit, yeah.
In case you forgot, you know. Yeah.
But this crack den that this witness is hanging out in is quite the high security crack den that they've got going on. Like, they've got bouncers and a chain link fence to try to block people off. At first I thought he was going into like an underground nightclub, and then it's like, no, that's not a nightclub. That's straight up cracked in.
I like to think that it's just like a free arts collective where they do improv on Wednesdays.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Yeah.
Real nice and wholesome.
It kind of reminded me, I don't know if you guys ever went to it back in the day to watch a show, but The Artery. It was in basically it was like an abandoned house just off Jasper Ave, and the city ended up closing it down because it was condemned pretty much. Like, it wasn't up to code, and it was a... But it was that kind of vibe. It was a nice place to go watch a show, if you like that type of seedy feel.
But he kicks his way in and says more great classic Schwarzenegger lines like, "I'm the party pooper."
Masterful. C'est magnifique.
Pooper or poopa?
Party pooper.
And so he says, "Hi, Cindy, mind if I sit down?" And I feel like Kimball's intimidation tactics seem to go against correct police procedure.
Yep, definitely.
His intimidation tactics were like less intimidation and more like the way that lonely guys on the internet try and like talk to their e-girls that they're into. They're like, "Come on, I'm never gonna leave you. I'm gonna be by your side all the time, no matter what." And then she like fuck off, and they're like, "Oh, girls only go for douchebags, not nice guys like Detective Kimball."
But he does talk her into participating in a lineup, and Crisp ends up in custody. And this is the scene where, like, I really looked at his beard and went, no, no, that that's not a real beard. But then it's time for Kimball to properly meet O'Hara. How have they never met before? I mean, we literally just saw her interrogating the witness on his behalf.
Yeah, that's weird. I didn't even pick up on that. I was just assumed that they were longtime partners.
Yeah, I didn't clock that either.
Yeah,
I recognize that they were like kind of new to each other, and that like the whole car ride scene over to the school. They're like introducing, trying to learn about each other. But yeah, what, you didn't feel like shaking a hand and being like, hi, I'm gonna go interrogate your witness for you. Not very formal.
What questions should I be asking her, since you're the one that handcuffed her to a corpse? Maybe you have some insight for me on the best interrogation technique here. I do love the line here, though, where he says, I've never seen someone so little eat so much. But it reminds me so much of a Three Men and a Baby line that has always stuck with me for some reason, where one of the guys in that movie says, how can something so small make so much of something so disgusting? Well, not only have they just met, but they're being made partners. And I did read, I don't remember the movie Junior well enough, but I was reminded of this. In Junior, the same actress plays a pregnant woman who has an enormous appetite, like she's constantly eating. So it's like, oh, well, I guess they saw what she could do in Kindergarten Cop with these sandwiches.
It seems like they had a big fixation on just like, oh, like, you were this character, so now we're going to give you a new name and we're going to put you in this movie and you just do the same stuff.
Yeah. Are you telling me that they don't give Arnold Schwarzenegger in the 1990s a whole lot of opportunities to showcase his deep range as an actor? What are you trying to say, Colin?
Touché.
So Kimball and O'Hara are paired up for their mission, where she's going in undercover as a kindergarten teacher in Astoria to try to find Crisp's family. I don't quite understand, though, how the jurisdiction of all this works. Like, they're going to another state.
Yeah.
How is it them that are running this undercover operation?
That's the thing, too, is, like, they're not even... If they were FBI, I could get behind it, but they're LAPD detectives.
Yep. Yeah, they're practically beat cops. Yeah,
there's no possible way that you could just go run an undercover sting in another state, especially, like, I'm pretty sure California and Oregon, they seem far. Oregon's, like...
Oregon is right above California. So, like,
okay.
It had me wondering as well, like, if you are this woman trying to escape this horrible, horrible man, why did you only go, like, two states away? Why didn't you go to the other coast? Or cross an international border and, like, go to Canada or something?
That's exactly it.
On the plane to Oregon, we see how great Kimball is with kids, where he says, if you don't stop kicking my seat, this is you, and he breaks the pencil.
Can I just say, that kid has to be strong as hell. Arnold Schwarzenegger is like 350 of pure muscle, and that kid was rocking him like, like paper in the wind. he was had him against the ropes there.
So on the plane, O'Hara gets sick, and I started wondering, was it the sandwich we saw her eat earlier that made her sick? Like, she unwraps a vending machine sandwich.
I think that's the implication, yeah.
Yeah.
I think they talk about something like that, about she's, like, talking about what it could have been that made her sick.
But she lists a whole bunch of things. She doesn't even list the sandwich in that part, I don't think.
So maybe she's just a really bad detective.
The vomit montage was kind of funny, though. Like, I especially love the one where she runs into the gas station and comes out with, like, the key on, with the hubcap hanging from it.
And can I also just say, the transition from him on the plane going, that the lady going, oh, is your wife doing okay? Something like that. And he goes, compared to what? And then it hangs in the air for half a second. And then it's just a hard cut to them driving with this, like, really cheery music playing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Super loud. And just, like, the duality between, like, the immediate shift in tone just made me laugh out loud how abrupt it was.
He just threatened to snap a kid's neck, too, in the, like, 3 minutes earlier, so. And then, yeah, here comes the cheery music.
Yeah, Christmas vacation, they're on the road.
But she says, I'll be fine, class starts at 9 in the morning, and in the car, Kimball is telling the story about his 13-year-old son, a story that gets told in multiple parts over the course of this movie. And then the ferret makes an appearance. And apparently ferrets are illegal to have as pets in California, a regulation that was supported by a certain future California governor. But I find it interesting that even back then, ferrets were illegal, and this cop has a pet ferret. Like, they didn't really think that one through, unless that's
Come on, movie.
Is that why he doesn't even have a cage for this ferret? He just keeps it in his pocket?
I don't think he's actually a detective. I just think he's a deranged homeless man. Like, he lives in his car. He has a pet ferret. He's always wearing this weird beige trench coat.
He has a badge that he got out of one of those little, like, turnstile coin-operated trinket machines.
Yeah, that's why the guy at the mall had to inspect it when he was in the salon. They were like, yeah, I'm calling this one in. Yeah, because it was just plastic.
Yeah, maybe he just had enough tickets of Chuck E. Cheese for it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was either that or like a slappy hand, you know?
I mean, you don't really see the ferret all that much. The ferret kind of shows up at strategic scenes that would almost lead me to believe that those scenes were put in after, because they were just like, we need something big to get the gun away from Chris or whatever and get the opening at the end.
Yeah.
So next morning, O'Hara looks like death, but insisting that she can go into the school, but Kimball has realized he has to do the assignment. So now he's clean shaven and prepped out. He peeled that beard right off. The spirit gum wasn't strong enough to make it permanent.
I absolutely love how he has his, like, girl next door moment. You know, he has his, like, she takes off her glasses and lets her hair down. That's what this scene was. She's in the bed and she looks, gives him, like, a look up and down, like an ooga. Oh.
But I do love the moment of, like, the how do I look? Take off the gun. But they're six-year-olds. How much trouble can they be? On second thought, take the gun. So we get some establishing shots of Astoria, and then we're at the school. I read that the school is located 1.6 miles from the Goonies house.
Hmm. 3 minutes away.
3 minutes away, yeah. Kimball is checking out Joyce while he waits for the principal, who is played by Penelope Ann Miller, who is in Biloxi Blues, Big Top Pee Wee, Carlito's Way, Chaplin, The Artist, The Shadow, Along Came a Spider. And now the principal, Miss Schlowski, is ready to meet Kimball. She is played by Linda Hunt, who is in Solo, She-Devil, Pocahontas, Carnival, and she's the narrator of God of War, if you play that game,
as well.
She's NCIS Los Angeles for the last however many seasons that show's been on the air.
I think she won an Academy Award.
She did for something, yeah.
The Year of Living Dangerously in 1982.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I've never even heard of that movie.
Neither have I.
The principal is a little thrown by the teacher swap and also understandably upset by the undercover operation happening in her school, but she takes Kimball to his classroom. And it's impressive, I must say, that the principal knows all the kindergarten kids' names. That's above and beyond for your job description.
Yeah, good for her. Above and beyond the call of duty. One thing that I was curious about in terms of, like, the undercover operation is, isn't the whole point of undercover operations that nobody knows it's an undercover operation? Like, they don't just tell the principal, like, yeah, by the way, there's going to be some undercover police work going on. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. It's like a 21 Jump Street thing.
Well,
like, isn't that like they're supposed to just be like, yeah, there's a new teacher coming in?
I feel like someone...
His name is a different name than Detective John Kimball.
I feel like someone would have had to be in on it, just because of the fact that they had to get rid of another kindergarten teacher to fit him in. Like, they forced that other kindergarten teacher into retirement after 25 years of teaching.
Yeah.
That's the power of the LAPD in Oregon, folks.
Yeah.
I could get on board with the principal knowing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems just like they would have to have some sort of, because, yeah, I don't know. I'm still not really even clear what the goal of, why did they have to go to the school? Did they know that she worked at the school?
No, they don't know that she works at the school. They just know that his kid goes to this school.
Goes to this school. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, the fact that she happens to work there is just like the biggest coincidence in the world.
Yeah, because after I was watching it, I was just kind of thinking, like, why didn't they, you know, just go do some actual police work?
Yeah.
And she couldn't figure out that the sandwich made her sick. Like, you're giving them a little too much credit.
It's also weird that then their strategy was to go to the school and somehow figure out which kid was his.
Yeah.
Instead of just trying to find the mother. I feel like you go for the mother first, not the child, would have been my strategy.
Yeah, but the only information they have is that this kid goes to that school.
Yeah.
And when you look at the files, they have like an out of focus picture of her, and like the picture they have of the kid is like 3 months old.
Yeah.
I don't know. They know he's white. That's about all they know at this point, I think.
That really helped a lot at the school they were in.
In Oregon. I also love the camera angle of the kids meeting Mr. Kimball, where it's towering over the kids, and then you see them all looking up. I thought it was great.
Yeah, I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah. And then the principal is all, they're all yours. I'll be watching you. And so the kids, I don't know, is this kid like the spokesperson of this class? The one kid that comes up with the boys have a penis, girls have a vagina? He's the icebreaker for any substitute teachers.
It's like, you know how you have like a class president who's like, hi, I'm so-and-so, let me give you the tour? It's that guy.
And I love the response of, thanks for the tip.
Did you guys think, like, looking at the kids in that class, I was very aware that they're not, it's not a uniform age.
Yeah.
Like, they all, some of them look like they could be 8, and then others look like they could be 4.
Yeah, Dominic especially looks like he's more, but yeah, the penis vagina kid, yeah, he is small.
The penis vagina kid also played Gage in the old Pet Sematary movie.
That's right.
So if you, you think about penis vagina kid, and then you think about the end of Pet Sematary, and penis vagina kid's not as cute anymore.
Yeah, I hope that people don't never refer to him in real life as penis vagina kid.
Just leaning out the windows of cars like, hey, you, is that the penis vagina kid over there? Yeah, it is.
Hey, yo, PV, PV.
He's like a local legend.
This is one of my favorite moments, though, from Arnold Schwarzenegger, though, because the kids are all laughing about Penis Vagina Kid, and he's just, ha 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 ha, quiet!
Thanks for the tip.
So we get the one little girl who has to pee, so Kimball runs out into the hall and ends up knocking on Joyce's classroom door, and she'll take care of it and then gives him some advice. Kindergarten is like the ocean. You don't want to turn your back on it. And he comes back in yelling, monsters! But it's amazing how unruly those kids get, considering before the principal arrived, there was no adult in the room then either. But they were, like, all sitting happily at their desks. But now that he has shown up and then left the room for, like, 45 seconds, they're painting on the fucking blackboard and
jumping on the piano.
And the one kid looking up the girl's skirts. Like he's got them all lined up on the table. I want to know the backstory behind this one of how he convinced these three girls to get up onto the table so that he could peek under their skirts. Oh, man. But, of course, we also get the principal sees him struggling and refuses to step in to help. And she thinks that after 2 more days of this, he'll quit. And then Kimball yells, shut up! And all the kids start crying. So did I. So he runs out to get something from his car. Do all the teachers have to park on the street? Like, he's like a block away from the school. Is there not a staff parking lot?
It wasn't in the budget.
So what he has gotten from his car is their new class mascot. I love the line of what happened to your dog. But here's my question. Why did you leave your live animal in a car with the windows rolled up?
Just chilling. Yeah. Crazy homeless guy. He's like a road warrior. He's not a detective.
Well, yeah, because he's also got this crazy intensity in his eyes where when he starts letting the kids pet the ferret, and he's like, yes, we're having a good time now. And his eyes are like bugged out while he's saying it.
I also loved with this scene, like the shut up scene. It took me straight back to this moment that probably everybody can relate to of when you had the cool teacher that everybody liked and you really pissed them off, or they had a substitute teacher and you were an animal, your class were a bunch of animals, that substitute teacher, and you come in the next day, the teacher just posted up on their desk at the front of class, like head down with their arms crossed, ready to go. And you just know it's over for you. You're about to get laid into. You just ruined the cool teacher's week. Put me right there.
Oh, yeah. If the sub had a bad time with us when our teacher came back, I remember that exact situation.
That was it. Yeah, that's
where it was like we all get into class and our teacher's just there sitting on his desk And then it's like everybody sits down, the door closes, the bell rings, and then it's just like, you know, a berating of like, you guys are so disrespectful and all this stuff.
Uh-oh, he knows.
I hope you're proud of yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just like seared into my memory.
I'm not mad, but I'm disappointed being yelled at like level 11.
This is like putting me on edge. Hearing these words again, I'm like, I'm sorry.
So at the end of the day, Dominic hangs behind a bit, helps him clean up. My mother's a teacher in this school too, and she's much better than you. And then I love how he starts listing all the people that are better teachers than him. My karate coach is a better teacher than you.
Yeah.
And then, is there anyone who isn't? I don't know that many people. This kid was not too bad. Like, I know it's twins too, but yeah, these kids were not too bad as Dominic.
No.
But like, he didn't go on to do much else. He has like a dozen total credits, but he wasn't bad at that age.
The kid who plays Dominic now is in the furniture industry and he owns a CBD store. So
nice.
There you go, Dominic. Good on you.
And so the next day at school, there's a group of moms standing around outside the school talking about Kimball. What kind of man teaches kindergarten? He's obviously gay. That is until they see him and all the moms are kind of into Kimball. Is Arnold Schwarzenegger a sex symbol? I mean, like, these women are really into him. It's like this and twins. Like, women are really into him and, like, drooling. Like, it's kind of like Batista in the movie Stuber, where the mom is like, oh, he's so hot. And it's kind of like, he's a little Neanderthal-ish, isn't he?
See, the question is, did you see the same pink polo shirt that I saw? Okay. That was molded to his body like it was sculpted.
Yeah.
Did you see the same shirt that I saw? Of course, all those moms were, oh my stars.
From the neck down, he looks fine. But from the neck up, there's a bit of a caveman vibe that I get from him.
You know those like punching things? We used to call them like the bobs, but they were like the dummies that were like boxing, punching things. That's what Arnold Schwarzenegger looks like. He just looks like the perfect jaw, like big brutish guy. The other proposal is, I don't think that the women are actually in love with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I think Ivan Reitman is.
Well, three movies with him at least.
I was going to say the pink really brought out his throbbing bicep vein at certain points as well. But I think you're onto something with the Ivan Reitman thing, and Joel, just because it's a well-known fact, like, whenever you talk to guys who work out a lot, like, no, women don't appreciate the muscles. You know who does appreciate the muscles? Other guys.
The boys, yeah. The all boys. Those trap bros walking around going, nice lats, buddy. And you're like, thanks, dude. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not curls for the girls. It's I don't know.
It's buys for the guys.
Yeah, there you go.
Buys for the guys.
I was trying to think of something that rhymed with bros, but buys for the guys works.
So in the classroom, Sylvester's mom becomes the number one suspect. She's played by Kathy Moriarty. She says her husband isn't in the picture because he left her for another man. So this is two references to gay in about 5 minutes. Like, is this movie really progressive, or is this a punchline?
Oh, it's a punchline. It's a punchline. The implication is absolutely gay? Oh, taboo.
I just couldn't tell, because, like, the lines are so blurred these days.
Yeah, I think that one definitely, I kind of even wrote a note about that. Yeah, it was like, it was about like 3.5 minutes between two very obvious like gay punchline jokes.
Yeah.
Like, homosexuality is the punchline.
And then I love the kid asking Mr. Kimball if he's married, and he says, no, I'm not. And he runs out to the hallway. No, mom, he's not.
I also love the woman, how you were talking about the three girls who got to line up on the desk. We could look up their skirts. The woman was like, oh, he's been playing with dolls. I'm a bit concerned. Mm. And Kimball goes, oh, yeah, no, he's doing it so that he knows how to look up girls' skirts. I've been keeping an eye on him. And she goes, oh. That's a relief.
So there's another veiled homophobic line,
That's a relief. It's like, oh, don't worry. He's not a potential homosexual. He's just a sex pervert. That's a relief. Like, whew, thank God.
Oh, boy. So... She also does say at this point, welcome to Astoria, the single parent capital of the world, which is funny because in 1990, Oregon wasn't even in the top 10 for divorce rates in the entire United States. So I don't know whether this is the anomaly in the entire state for single moms, but if you go to the actual census of the United States in 1990, no, this line is not at all accurate.
Listen, you know those ads that you always see on suspicious websites that are like hot single mothers in your area looking for you?
Yes, I know those well.
They get a year, and if they don't fulfill their quota, they gotta go to Astoria. They gotta go to Oregon. It's in a contract they sign.
So then we get some more great moments from Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'm surprised. I read that the kids loved Arnold Schwarzenegger so much, but like some of the stuff he does is so terrifying that if I was on the receiving end of that shit, like I'd be traumatized for life. Like he goes to the one kid, "You're eating other people's lunches. Stop it." So Kimball decides to play a game with the kids. The "Who is your daddy and what does he do" game. And we get the famous "it's not a tumor" line in the scene. But I love the kids' explanations of what their daddies do for a living.
Oh, like, that's the best scene in the whole movie for me.
Yeah, my daddy doesn't do anything ever since the accident.
Since the crash.
There is the one little girl that speaks Spanish, and that one translates to "my dad works from home and plays with me all the time." And there's a part of me where it's like, that's sweet, or is it a cry for help? Daddy plays with me all the time. So does Uncle Steve. No, not going there? Okay.
I'm gonna go to the bathroom, guys. I'll be back.
Yes. See.
And then of course we get the twin girls that say our mom says our dad is a real sex machine.
I love this scene. I took a top three of my favorite quotes.
Okay.
Of them.
Number three.
Yeah. Number three, we have "my dad's divorced, my mom's divorced," and then this was like a pause. It cracked me up. Number two. "He lives in New York and is a taxi driver. Mom hopes he dies real soon."
And our number one favorite line
was, of course, "my dad doesn't do anything since the crash." And the way that he delivers that line makes it sound like he cut his dad's brake line.
Now, I mean, I know I did a deep dive into these kids' credit lists, hoping that I would come across someone where I was like, oh my God, that's Shia LaBeouf, or that's a young Sarah Michelle Gellar or something, right? But none of those. However, I did read that Elijah Wood did audition.
Oh, that's cool.
But with all these kids, like a few of them are still working actors. Several of them have topped out at around a dozen, but many for them, this was it. It was like they're only known for Kindergarten Cop.
And what a thing to be known for.
Yeah, I mean, if you can only do one, it's not a bad one.
It's like how the woman who played Nurse Ratched, you know, that was her one movie. She won the Academy Award.
Yep.
These kids, Kindergarten Cop,
went out
over
top.
The Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah.
The same caliber of cinema.
So Kimball is trying to talk to the weird spaz kid, Zach, when the fire alarm goes off. I love how, like, he's trying to be nice, and all the kids are like, "Yeah, he's a poopy head. Yeah, he's a poopy face." And like he just kind of blows off the kids instead of turning around and going, "Dude, like, that's not nice."
He actively encourages these kids bullying one another. He's like, "Yeah, gang up on him."
Yeah.
But the fire alarm goes off, and it takes 4 minutes for the kindergarten class to come out. Terrible. But I love how they all come running out screaming. Some of them are hanging on to Arnold Schwarzenegger. And then that night, Kimball and O'Hara are going out for dinner because she's ready to eat again, and they run into Dominic and his mom, Joyce. And at the restaurant, he meets Joyce. Like, she actually introduces herself. "Hi, I'm Joyce." Like, how is it that they've worked at the school for a couple of days now and never once introduced himself to this woman that he's already talked to a couple times? Like, this is O'Hara all over again. He just doesn't like introducing himself to people.
I feel like when you're Arnold Schwarzenegger, when you walk in a room, people know who you are.
Yeah, yeah.
Same goes for John Kimball. He's like, "Oh, you know me. Yeah, I handcuff witnesses to corpses all the time. I've got a bit of a record. I'm a bit of a celebrity."
It'd be more like, "You know me, I'm the one who's just been leering at you from the other classroom on the regular."
Yeah.
hoping to catch your eye.
But O'Hara pretends to be his sister because she is going to play Love Doctor. Now, even though she's trying to hook these two up, this also seems like a breach in their undercover procedure by changing their cover story with one person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's what'll get them taken off the police force.
Yeah.
That's the one that'll get them.
But I also love Dominic's line here of, I like how they talk, because she puts on the Austrian accent. And so Joyce subtly tells them that people come to small towns to hide from things, and then quickly deflects to, well, what brings you here? But after dinner, Joyce tells Kimball that if he were any stiffer, people could use him as a surfboard. I think that's a little double entendre after the flirty flirt nature of the date with Joyce. But yeah, he says, the kids are pushing me around. And she gives him the advice that if those kids know you're scared, they'll walk all over you. Show no fear. It's just like any other police situation. So he decides to institute police school. Boy, this looks like the most fun in the world. And he institutes the whistle as well. And one of my favorite lines out of this scene is, you want a bathroom? There is no bathroom. Your mummies aren't here to wipe your tushies anymore. There is no bathroom. Oh. Oh boy.
I love this whole segment. This is like the point for me where the movie kind of turned in my mind of like, it was really cheesy and really obnoxious. And like I don't say obnoxious, but just like the writing, not phenomenal. The story doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Yeah. A lot of plot holes. And I was kind of looking at it very cynically pretty much until this scene when I was like, Arnold Schwarzenegger just looks like he's having so much fun right now that I can't help but just enjoy watching this. Yeah. Like, he looks like he's having the time of his life.
Yeah, I would say that I agree. The movie turns for me at the point that he kind of gets more invested in being a teacher.
Yeah.
And more invested in being, like, he gets more invested in the kids, I guess. And, like, getting to know the kids and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. But I also love the little girl here that, I'm not a policeman, I'm a princess.
Go sit on the carpet!
I'm not a policeman, I'm a princess! Okay. But, you know, and also it's a good thing Dominic approves of his teaching style, gives him the old okay fingers. And then John Kimball becomes Arnold Schwarzenegger by making everything all about fitness. I did read that this was one of the stipulations in his contract for doing this movie, is he's like, we have to have a fitness through line, and we also have to show broken homes and abuse, because he wanted to make sure that they were making a statement with this movie as well.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
But we get the montage of the fitness and practicing fire drills and marching like soldiers. So, I mean, he's Austrian. This has a little Third Reich feel to it to me. That
Well, I mean, they're very efficient, well-mannered people.
My favorite bit about the Austrian thing, because like they straight up were just like, yeah, he's from Austria. We're not going to try and hide the fact that Arnold is from Austria. Was in the restaurant when she was like, I'm his sister. Hello. And shook the kid's hand. I was like, I would trust that anybody is from Austria if they shake the hand of a child. Yeah. They're like, hello, a formal greeting. Salutations. I'm like, yep.
Yeah.
Das Auto, buddy.
And also in this montage, they all get milk, and then just before nap time, we almost get the story about Kimball's son, Alex, but it gets cut off because he's all, never mind, it's nap time. But, like, such a dramatic reading of this book from Arnold Schwarzenegger. Did you make note of how dramatically he was reading this Winnie the Pooh book?
Yeah, I wrote down, Arnold's really gritting his teeth here, huh?
Yeah.
He's really giving it his all. He's trying to lay it on the line right now. I think that the slow, like, pan in on his face as it was, like, happening.
Yeah.
I was like, ooh, settle down. It's not that serious, Arnold.
And then we get this weird little nightmare moment about Crisp during this time. And then Joyce comes in and wakes him up and invites Kimball for supper. And then, like, intimately wipes off his milk mustache. I guess he should have used a straw like the kids. And then Kimball gets back to his motel room and sees a strange car parked outside. And I love how when he walks into the room, he has a gun taped behind the dresser. Like, he's like a doomsday prepper, man. Like, he's thinking of every situation. Like, he's just prepared. He's got guns stashed all over the fucking room.
I feel like he's the kind of guy where if you lift up, like, you know, one of his pant legs, you know, you'll just see a stash of arms.
But it's actually Phoebe's fiance, Henry. He had driven up there to surprise her for her birthday. And then, again, you know, great communication with your partner. Oh, it's your birthday? Like, you haven't taken the time to get to know this woman?
Yeah, and but also like, oh yeah, by the way, my fiance's coming up. So when you come into the house, don't blow his head off.
Well, he surprised her. He brought her favorite meal, so.
Right, yeah.
But we get a scene where Kimball finally catches up with Zach's mom. And she's like, I know what this is about. It's the bruises on Zach's legs. And so, like, he is just, like, just dumb luck. This detective, this fucking detective has stumbled into an abuse situation. Like, he's got blinders on when it comes to, like, finding Crisp's kid that, like, he didn't even notice that there is a kid getting beat up in his class.
Who was showing obvious signs that he was, like, traumatized.
Yeah.
Like, obvious signs. It wasn't subtle at all.
But he quickly figures out how to turn this around so that he doesn't look like an idiot for attacking her for another reason. And, well, is he beating you up too? If it happens again, I'll press charges. So Crisp's mother, we get a quick scene. She pays some drug dealer to give the witness chick from the beginning some bad drugs. And then back to Kimball getting ready for his date. O'Hara has a bottle of wine for the occasion. She says, it took me all morning, but I discovered that Zachary is not related to Crisp. And he dismisses her like, I know that already. But what research she was doing couldn't have been easy in 1990. And it's like, you know, you're not going to pick up the phone and tell your partner, oh, by the way, we can cross this person off the suspect list. Because, like, what exactly is the other partner in this equation doing anyway? Like, they're not staking out the school. Why are there two people on this mission to begin with? And then you're not even going to update the person that I'm assuming is doing the research and the paperwork and, like, all the, you know, policing. So
yeah, like, I'd hope she's doing more than just getting laid and eating pasta. Like, I know there's a little bit more to the LAPD than, you know, than just that. It ain't the Los Angeles pasta department.
Good use of taxpayer dollars. That's a good one.
So Kimball arrives at Joyce's house with his wine and flowers that Phoebe had for him. And Joyce tasks Kimball to start a fire. Because, you know, that's usually what you do with a guest is, hey, why don't you start a fire? Because dinner's not for another 10 minutes. Dominic is going to show him where the wood is and takes him to his secret hiding spot, you know, and tells him all about the lasers that are here to protect us from the bad people and how he's going to plant lasers on that antenna over there. But he has to do it at night. And then after this weird ass scene, they don't even come in with firewood. Like, that's why you went out there.
And it just wasn't addressed. Joyce was just like, okay, I guess.
I guess we're not having a fire now. Okay.
I love the scene out in the woods because it has one of my favorite tropes from particularly like late 80s to like 90s movies of kids just going from saying really ominous things to just, okay. And then it's like moving on. Like, he was like, I set up the lasers to keep the bad people away.
I see dead
people. Come on, let's go inside. Like, like, there's like a direct, like, he's like a shot where he looks up at Arnold to say to keep the bad people away, and there it hangs in the air.
Yeah.
And then he's like, all right, let's get back to it, let's forget about the firewood.
Yeah. So before supper, Kimball starts going through Joyce's shit. He takes a little extra time going through the panty drawer though.
Again, there's a reason he was so happy to see that one kid was turning into a sex pervert. He's like, that's my guy right there.
I also love how in Dominic's room, he has real Ghostbusters sheets, which is like the wink and the thumbs up to the camera for Ivan Reitman here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's suspicious and kind of interrogates Joyce for a little bit. So she spills everything. Dominic doesn't even remember him, and I prefer it that way. Truth is, my ex-husband is a walking nightmare. Yahtzee, we found our person. But I don't understand, were these people actually hooked up? Because she does not seem like the type that would fall for Crisp in his Steven Seagal ponytail.
And I was thinking the exact same thing. Like, I was just looking at the guy and I was like, what do you offer? Especially later on in the movie, during the grand finale of the film, I was looking at this guy and I was like, he seems well adjusted. Yeah. He seems like, you know, he's good at investing and he'd be a real family man. Like,
or has she just changed her life enough that she blends better than these cops do? You know, the people that are actually trained in being undercover.
Ooh.
That's why she could only go as far as Oregon. She didn't have to go further because, like, her skills at being a chameleon were just so on point.
She just wanted to reinvent herself.
Yeah.
Or maybe, because in that picture that they have, the baby's only, like, 3 months old or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Did she leave? Because, I mean, like, having a kid can change a person, so maybe it was, like, maybe she was kind of, like, one of those, like, wild party girls.
Or a mob wife.
A mob wife, yeah, and when she had the kid, she was like, you know what, this life ain't for me, so then she moved to Oregon and decided to become a reformed citizen.
I have to turn myself around, sir! I have to change my life!
Yeah.
So, while practicing presidential speeches at school, O'Hara shows up, and he tells the kids, I want you to walk around in the circle. Go! Like, that's how he keeps the kids busy. Just go walk in circles, kids!
Yeah. Like lemmings, you know, they just follow one after another.
It's so much fun. Oh, boy. O'Hara hasn't found out anything shady about Joyce's past, but Phoebe sees the other mom and thinks that, hey, this woman fits the description more. You know, the one that her husband left for another man. He's like, no, 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 it can't possibly be her. No, that's just a big old red herring dangling in front of you, O'Hara. So also on the school day, Zach arrives late, and so Kimball beats up Zach's dad.
That's my favorite scene of the entire movie, probably.
Yeah.
There's just something so good about it. It's so nice to see justice delivered.
Well, and I love the principal's reaction, where he goes in and he's like, I'm sorry for punching him in front of children was wrong. And she said, and she's like, tell me, how good did it feel? Don't lie, how good did it feel to hit that son of a bitch?
Yeah.
And then she does, like, her really bad punch. Like,
yeah. She had her little breakfast club freeze frame, like, yeah.
But, yeah, she says, you have no teaching experience whatsoever, do you? You know, I thought the ferret was a terrible idea, but it worked out. I didn't think the whistle was a good idea, but it worked. I don't know what kind of police officer you are, but you are a very good teacher, which is planting seeds for the inexplicable ending of this movie.
Yeah.
But O'Hara has found out that their witness is dead, and Crisp is going to walk. You know, and of course, Crisp has the whole, like, mother, we're going to be a family again. And, this mom is terrible. I hate this mom.
Also, in regards to, like, the thing we were talking about earlier with, like, the, you know, I was young and I was stupid and I made a mistake with this guy. Can you ever imagine if you were a woman being with a guy that calls his mom mother and being like, yeah, yeah. That's the guy for me. You know?
Yep.
I mean, I think the only thing worse would be a guy who calls his mother mummy.
Hey, Meemaw.
Meemaw.
Now we've got a carnival with a three-legged race and everybody's having fun. And then the kindergarten kids perform the Gettysburg Address. So, like, what the fuck is this carnival that they've got? Like, is this a big drawing feature in Astoria, Oregon? Hey, don't miss the President's Day school sponsored carnival.
Yeah, I don't know what it was, but when the scene started, I had very intense, like, Catalina wine mixer vibes from it.
I was expecting a drum set to show up. Yeah.
Well, I was looking at this park, and all I could think about is, I think this is the same field where the restaurant in the Goonies is. Because, like, the view is exactly the same.
Hmm.
I also noticed, I couldn't help but notice that the principal is, like, watching Kimball for most of the speech that the kids are giving. Like, it's because it's so obvious because she's so short and he's so tall. And she's, like, she's staring at him. Like, I don't understand why she's watching Kimball and not the kids.
Again, did you see the same fitted polo shirt that I saw?
She's, like, the size of one of his biceps. I mean...
Honestly, yeah.
So Crisp and his mom have arrived in town, and we get this whole, like, racetrack scene where he's like, I promised my son I would buy him a racetrack. And so he just beats up some guy over it. You know, that's a nice inconspicuous entrance into this town. Recently paroled criminal.
I mean, to be fair, I like that he tries multiple times to at least buy it.
Yeah, that's true.
I would have taken the $200. I don't know what that guy's problem was. Like,
oh no, my kid's been bugging me since Christmas for this.
I thought that it was just supposed to show, like, the parallels between, like, fatherhood. Yeah. You know, how one guy's like, sorry, no matter what, my kids, you know, what my kid wants is the most important thing to me. And so the guy's like, I will give you $200. Let me tell you what, $400. I'm going to kidnap my kid. All right.
Yeah.
I'm going to try and kidnap him. He's going
to
love it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When candy and puppies aren't enough to get the kid in the van, you got to buy a racetrack.
I'm sold.
And meanwhile, mother goes to buy a whole bunch of ridiculous medicine, right? Like he's all, you shoved all this crap down my throat and there's nothing wrong with me. That's because I shoved all this crap down your throat. But she's got a fucking enema on the counter there.
Like,
oh my God, I do not want to live with this woman. No wonder he turned out the way he did.
Well, the reason that he also turned out as big and strong as he did is because she breastfed him until 18.
Oh, must have. Absolutely. And while they're standing at this pharmacy counter, the mother spritzes on 4 squirts of perfume. Like, how much does she stink right now? Like, that would be an immediate migraine for me. Like, look at her. You know that isn't a nice-smelling perfume. Like, you know that's, like, the worst possible eau de toilette that there is right there.
Yeah. And you know it's just covering up, like, the smell of just cigarettes.
Yeah.
Just cigarettes and old velvet. Like, you know when you go to the thrift store and you try on a jacket and it's, like, a little musty? It's a little bit like cigarettes and just, like, it's been sitting there for a while.
Yeah.
So O'Hara shows up at the carnival. She knows Crisp is in town, and Crisp could be on his way here right now. So we need to get her to tell us where the money is. You know, I can understand that she's upset because Kimball lied to her, but like she just suddenly, there is no money, you son of a bitch. There never was. Like, she gets so furious with him, and it's like, well, I don't know. Like, you have to understand, they're here to protect you.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it's an overreaction. Like, I can understand the deception is frustrating to her, but on the other hand, you know.
I agree. I get what you're saying. Obviously, like, it's a weird conversation to have. Like, it's very shocking, so I understand her reaction. But by the same merit, you kind of got to be like, they're not here to, like, you know, screw her over. They're not here to, like, kidnap the kid. Like, they're here. Yeah.
But we find out that Crisp doesn't want her. He wants Dominic. That's his only motivation, basically. So Joyce rushes to get out of there. And then, like, Kimball has this moment where he's kind of like, well, let's just let her go. And Phoebe's like, no, go after her. Like, it's a rom-com. But it's like, no, go after the witness. But it's like the way she says it, it's like, no, go after her. Meet her at the gate of the airport. Profess your feelings.
Yeah, she literally gave him a big slap on the shoulder. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But finally, Kimball chases her home. But so much time has passed because she's already had enough time to pack her shit, and Dominic is already missing by the time Kimball gets there.
What and did it's you like have dark
left?
Out.
Yeah. What did you have left, like, 3 minutes after her? But she's all upset, but he said something about going to get his lasers. Oh, lasers, I think I know where he is. Yep, he's climbing the antenna. So Dominic has gone rogue. Yeah. And a bird freaks him out and he falls miraculously caught by his backpack. So he's busy telling Joyce, I wish I was a kindergarten teacher, but I'm not. I'm a cop. And that's all I know how to be. But yes, we found out that Crisp lied and said that she stole $3 million, but there was never any money. It would just motivate people to look for her. And then we've got this really weird, like, they've been on one date. He just learned her name one date ago. And he's like, I don't want to lose you, and I don't want to lose Dominic. And then they kiss for what I have to presume is the first time. And that is an ugly-looking kiss, too.
Yeah, it's a little sloppy.
There was, like, there was some aggression there.
So she decides that she's going to trust the cops. So the next day at school, he brings in Phoebe as backup, and we get a reprise of the penis-vagina joke. But with her line of, well, you taught them the basics, that's important.
Yeah.
And then the kid is sitting there, like, silently cheering himself by, like, pumping his fists in the air. Like, he's a pretty cute kid. She's there to tell them about strangers. And while the stranger talk is happening, we pan over to the principal's office where we see Crisp is in a meeting with the principal, and he gets a tour of the kindergarten room, and he recognizes Dominic immediately. Then he sees Kimball, who was under the dog pile of kids. Dominic is the winner! So Crisp lights a fire in the library, and the fire alarm goes off, and, and he tells O'Hara to check it out, even though you can see smoke through the window. And then she opens the door, and it still takes her a few seconds to actually say that the hallway is full of smoke.
Can I just say, burning down the whole school?
Mm-hmm.
That's your plan?
Yeah.
That's your plan, to burn down the entire school. Did you not think this through even a little bit? Like, how is that supposed to help you out? How is that supposed to benefit you? Besides, like, it gives you a bit of a cover, but then it's like, yeah, you've kidnapped a kid and you've also burnt down a school. Like, and they're not just going to let you go scot-free. You don't go to the Ferrari dealership and blow it up because you want to ride one off the lot.
Yeah.
It's also hilarious because he sets the school on fire and goes in, but then with all the smoke, he can't find his way out.
Yeah.
Like, he just gets lost. So, like, his plan has immediately backfired.
Yeah. But in the chaos, Crisp grabs Dominic, but luckily, they just learned about Stranger, so the other kids start yelling, Stranger! And so he takes off upstairs, and he's, no, it's okay, I'm a fireman. Where is your hat? Oh, you're so smart! Oh, my God, he would be such a creepy father.
Yeah.
I'm your father, Dominic.
The way that he says, you're gonna have to trust me, Dominic! You're gonna have to trust me! With, like, serial killer hatred in his eyes. Yep. I'm like, yeah, I trust that guy.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, he just took a bump.
Yeah. He was doing key rails as he was running upstairs.
But while trying to find Dominic, Kimball busts in on two kids making out in one of the rooms. Isn't this an elementary school? Like, they look and act junior high at least.
Yeah, like 12, 13.
Yeah. The boy is Jason Reitman, though, which I thought was kind of fun. Future director Jason Reitman. But then we also get a little misogyny from the fire department when O'Hara is trying to get back in to the school. And the one firefighter is like, yeah, if I ever need a ticket fixed, I'll call you, sweetheart. So she can't get in. But this is when Crisp's mom hits O'Hara with her car.
She takes it like a champ.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then we get in the locker room of this school. Again, like, it's an elementary school. Why is there a locker room? Unless this is an American thing. None of my elementary schools ever had locker rooms. But that whole scene between, like, Crisp and Joyce when they're in this room, it would be so intense to witness as a six-year-old. The whole, he's not your hostage, he's your son, and the you took him from me, and all that sort of thing. Like, it's just, it's...
Again, the entirety of this movie, from the start to finish, is John Kimball going around and traumatizing people. That's it.
We do get the part here where the ferret that supposedly never bites anyone saves the day by crawling out of Dominic's sweater and biting Crisp. Not just biting Crisp like on the fucking neck.
He goes for the jug.
Absolutely, yeah. But Crisp gets killed with some very red paint-looking blood splatter.
Yeah.
And Crisp's mom also shoots Kimball, and he drags himself into the shower, and she's all, where's my grandson? And then O'Hara, to the rescue, takes her down with a baseball bat with one of the best cop lines ever. Like, everyone, you know, every superhero needs a catchphrase. I like this one. You're not so tough without your car, are ya? Love it.
Classic. Love it. And to the Crisp thing, do you think that, like, as he was getting shot, the thought crossed his mind, you know, maybe I should have just gone for every second weekend.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Maybe I shouldn't have burnt down the school. Maybe I should have just tried to go for split custody. Yeah.
Couples counseling, in hindsight, was a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
Did either of you notice Crisp's mom's hair when she gets taken down with that bat?
What about it?
I mean, I think it's a stunt person. Okay. But if it's not a stunt person, the whole back of it comes up in, like, one block. Like she has so much hairspray and mousse that her hair no longer moves independently. It just moves in massive chunks.
Well, it's like a low-quality render, you know?
Yeah.
Just moves all as one.
I know that, like, I was definitely noticing, like, the rogue stripe that she had in her hair. And then it was, like, kind of purplish. But I didn't notice that particular moment. Kimball is taken off on a stretcher, and at the hospital, we get the, he doesn't want to eat that. He's a tough guy. Tough guys don't eat Jell-O. And then Henry comes in, and he says, I almost didn't recognize you with your clothes on. So now we get the moment, though, where we find out that Phoebe and Henry are engaged, and they want to invite Kimball to the wedding, but they ask, where do they send the invitation? So I guess you can just become a kindergarten teacher now without any kind of education degree.
Is that the conceit at the end of that, when he comes back, that he's going to return to just be a teacher?
I think so. That was the impression I was under. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I thought.
Yeah. I don't think he was just back to visit. Yeah. I think it was the big teary kiss that they share, that he shares with Joyce at the end and everything like that. Like, I really think he's back.
Huh. I guess I didn't really pick up on that, but probably just because the idea of it seems so implausible.
Oh, well, yes, absolutely. But, you know, it's, well, I faked it for pretty well for a few weeks there. I think I could do this.
The principal gave me a gold star, so.
Yeah, she said, I like the cut of your jib, son, and she was hired.
But, you know, to me, it also seems a little far-fetched that this is the first time that Joyce has seen Kimball. You'd think that she would have come to visit him in the hospital or something. Like, why is this such a big surprise?
Well, perhaps it's because she was working with the absolute all-star janitorial staff to clean the entire school spotless in the span of what is presumed to be, like, a couple weeks.
Yeah.
The whole school was on fire, and there's no signs that anything was wrong at all. School's back to normal next week. Grab your books, kids. Like,
yeah, but he literally saved her and her son. Like, that's the only people that he was really there to save, and he and his partner did it. Why didn't she visit them in the hospital? I don't know.
Did she even send flowers or anything? A little letter, a little thanks. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Like, Henry drove all the way down with some pasta for him.
Yeah.
But that is the end, and that is Kindergarten Cop. Now, Colin, Joel, on IMDb, it scored 6.2 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 61. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 51% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 52. But, Colin, those are just numbers. Like, a 5-year-old giving advice on what your headache might actually be. Why don't you tell us what other people think?
Alrighty, I'm going to start with some critic reviews. So first I have Roger Ebert with the Chicago Sun-Times says, Kindergarten Cop is made up out of parts that shouldn't fit, but somehow they do, making a slick entertainment out of the improbable, the impossible, and Arnold Schwarzenegger. Rita Kempley with the Washington Post says, though Schwarzenegger remains to acting what ham hocks are to cheese course, he manages against all odds to be appealing as the Austrian au pair. Think of it as to Conan with love.
Nice, nice.
Rotten Tomatoes user Farah Gwen H. gave the movie 5 out of 5 stars and said, ace. The acting is phenomenal. The storyline is phenomenal. The film is not too predictable. The movie is amazing and has aged well. Often, films of this age contain sexism, and this film doesn't. The stunts are really well pulled off, too, and the children who act in it are so good. It is amazing to think that 6-year-olds have acted with such naturalism is unbelievable. This film is a must-see.
See, I was wondering whether we were going to go to the thesaurus or whether everything was going to be phenomenal on that one. I was beginning to wonder. But I do agree that the kids were actually not too bad. Like,
yeah.
My favorite acting, like, delivery in the whole thing was during the supercut of all the kids talking about, like, who's your daddy and what does he do? Yeah. There's one girl that's just kind of rambling about how she's like, my dad works with computers, and he has a beard, and he is bald, and it's really obvious that she's just talking about her real dad. Like, her real life dad.
Yeah.
Like, the delivery of it is so endearing because it's the way that kids talk about things that they're not really sure about.
Yeah.
I actually did like the child acting in this movie.
Yeah.
Okay, I have one more. It's kind of a long one, but I appreciated this. Well, this guy just goes real hard. His name's Bill G. He gave the movie 1 out of 5 stars. Buckle up. So he says, this movie should have been titled Kindergarten Crap. Jesus Christ. The last time I saw anything so rancid, someone had left a pound of blue cheese on the asphalt in a parking lot in Death Valley. Fuck me, what were they thinking? Citizen Kane?
Holy shit.
Dig this. A cop has to go undercover to catch a drug dealer. Fair enough. A cop has to go undercover as a kindergarten teacher to catch a drug dealer. Don't think so. Oh, and the undercover cop?
Don't think so.
3-inch, 260-pound bodybuilder who can't speak English and whose biceps are larger than Dom DeLuise's thighs. I'm used to suspending my disbelief for sci-fi movies, for example, but this hunk of shit is ridiculous. Where are the studio execs who greenlit this pitch? They'd probably greenlight John Goodman to star in the Kate Moss story. And think of the children. My God. What the filmmakers put all these five-year-olds through for a couple of months, no doubt as joyful an experience as the Bataan Death March. All in all, I give this movie a half star for the producers who have somehow convinced the imitable yet oft-misunderstood Oscar winner Linda Hunt to appear in this crime against nature. If your choice is watching this movie or watching New Jersey Governor Chris Christie take a shit, go with Christie. Fewer lasting psychosis-inducing mental images.
Oh my God!
Wow. And there's also the question of, like, what did Dom DeLuise and John Goodman ever do to this guy? Like,
Jesus! Oh my God! What a lambasting! That person was like, "I'm not going to go to therapy for a while. I'm just going to channel all of my anger into a review about the film Kindergarten Cop."
Oh.
Yeah, like, I wonder what happened before he wrote that review, if he, like, had a real hard day, and he was like, oh, my friend recommended this good movie, it's the perfect thing to cheer me up, and then...
they tried to kidnap their child, and then,
yeah,
it didn't go as planned. I found one review that I just laughed at, which will in no way be able to stand up to that one, but on IMDb, 8 stars, Awesome Wolf, 11th of January, 2005. I wish Arnie had been my teacher. I reckon Arnie would make the best teacher. For starters, he could teach physical education and Austrian and politics and awesome, among other things. Schoolyard bullying and vandalism would be a thing of the past. And if any of the students were having domestic troubles at home, Arnie would find out and then bam, problem solved. Just like in Kindergarten Cop.
Nice.
And then they give a bit of a plot synopsis and talk about why they like it. And the final line, Kindergarten Cop proves that Arnie is family friendly as well as awesome. Bravo. 8 out of 10. Check it out. You should like it. And if you don't, I'm sure Arnie will forgive you. Nice. As if they're like good friends.
Yeah.
But just, you know.
I want to know what school I can go to take the class of awesome.
Like, Austrian, or go to school and go, all right, kids, politics today.
Yeah.
Social studies.
Yeah, that was a class option that I did not have a choice of when I was in school. So
I would have signed up for awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if we can top either of those last two reviews. But like I said, low 60s for IMDb and low 50s for Rotten Tomatoes. Joel, it's your first viewing. What did you think of Kindergarten Cop?
Here's the thing with the film. I went in expecting to hate it.
Okay.
Like, fully, my expectation was this is going to be awful. It's going to be, like, cheesy, campy, fun, but it's not going to be, like, enjoyable. And honestly, I was wrong. I knew it would be cheesy schlock with a script that's not exactly like, you know, like Schindler's List. You know, I knew that the character development would just, like, Arnold's character would just be Arnold Schwarzenegger. It was going to be, I was expecting like a 4 out of 10, but honestly, I really enjoyed it with all of its flaws. It's really hard to feel cynical watching a movie that's basically just Arnold Schwarzenegger really enjoying himself, hanging out with children, seeing this massive brick wall of a man, just hanging out with kids, you know, doing physical education. It's just really charming. Like, he's the human equivalent of a silverback gorilla, and he's teaching these kids how to, like, walk in a straight line. It's just, it's ridiculous. Yeah. It's ridiculous from start to finish. The plot doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yep.
There's a litany of plot holes, but you can just turn your brain off and enjoy it And sometimes that's all you need from a movie. Not everything needs to be the best thing in the world. I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would. I'd say like 7.2.
Okay.
7.23.
Wow.
Get real precise.
7.33333 repeating.
Yeah, repeating. Yeah.
I don't know. My opinion on this movie hasn't really changed at all. I would say like taking a closer look at it and talking about it is kind of like the holes in the plot are even more like more apparent to me now when I think of this movie.
Oh yeah.
When I think of this movie, I really only think of the point when he gets to the school and onwards. I forget about everything that came before it, the weird grizzled homeless man with a shotgun and all that shit. And yeah. Like I almost feel like you could just take all that out of the movie and it would still make sense. So I don't know. I land probably with the Rotten Tomatoes crowd. I'd give it a solid right down the middle, just 50%. It's not a movie that I don't hate it, but I also don't really care for it.
Yeah. Okay. It's been a while since I've seen this, and I think a few of the jokes kind of landed a little bit differently with me this time. But yeah, I don't go as low as the Rotten Tomatoes, but I'm probably more in line with the IMDb scores than Joel is. Like, Joel really found some joy in this movie. And I still have a soft spot for Arnold Schwarzenegger comedies. I love Twins. And so this is one of those ones. Like, I agree with you, Colin, where you say that, yeah, I kind of blank out. I repressed the first portion of this movie and forgot about that a little bit. But I mean, I've had an absolute blast talking about it, and looking for all the holes this time was almost worth the price of admission right there for me. But I can get behind like a mid-60s. Like, I'm going to go 65 on this. 65. I still enjoyed it. I still had a good time. I appreciated the kid actors a little bit more than I probably would have in the past. And I still got a kick out of it. So that's where I sit.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised by how much I enjoyed it, because I'm a very cynical movie watcher. I always have been since I was a kid.
Yeah.
Which just shows I've always been a bit of a dick instead of, you know, anything actually meaningful. And I turned my brain off watching it. And I was like, he, big funny man, play with children. It's like when watching Coco the gorilla, like, hold a kitten for the first time. It's like, aw, look at this. Two things interacting that just doesn't make any sense. That just in a nature setting would never work.
Yeah, I do agree with you guys about the kids. I did think that they were... Every time I laughed in this movie, it was a scene with the kids and Arnold and his reactions to them and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is about this movie. It just never really... I've never really been sold on it. It just never really grabs me the way that other 90s kid comedy movies do.
Yeah.
I also think, like, reading the reviews and stuff, because I usually think of this movie as a straight comedy, a lot of the reviews talk about how it doesn't really have a set tone. That was a common criticism of it. It's like it doesn't really ever land on what kind of genre it's supposed to be. Like,
yeah.
It starts off as this almost like hardcore action cop, like normal cop movie, and then you throw in the kid element, which really just throws everything off.
Yeah.
But that weird suspense thriller is always just bubbling underneath the surface. And it's really bizarre. I don't know. I think that maybe that's what it just kind of throws me off the whole thing.
Well, there we go. That is Kindergarten Cop, and that's our show for this week. A big thank you to our second ever three-peat guest, Joel Sims. That ought to keep Walter Mondale fan happy for a little while, having you back.
Anything for him. Anything for him, you know?
Well, if you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out on the business end is to tell your friends. Share our posts. Word of mouth is really important in that sea of podcasts that's out there. Every celebrity has a podcast. We're not celebrities. So every new person that you tell is huge for us. Or if you want to go above and beyond and you want to tell the world about us and use science, use algorithms and the interwebs and everything like that, go on to whatever app it is you listen to your podcast on and give us 5 stars. Doesn't matter what you say in those reviews. It's not for our egos. You can tell us it's not a tumor, but it's those 5 stars. They just drive us up the charts and help us get noticed.
Listen, today Joel Sims, tomorrow Joe Rogan, you know?
There you go.
There you go.
Climbing those charts.
And be sure to check out our website, www.iusedtolikethisone.com. There you can find links to all our social media as well as all our podcast episodes. We have Twitter, we have Facebook, we have Instagram. Be sure to check out our posts, like them, comment, share. If you want to get in touch with us, you can also reach us by email at iusedtolikethisone@gmail.com. Give us a shout, let us know what you like about the show, what you hate about the show, and if you want, let us know about a movie that you used to like, and maybe you'll see it in our podcast feed.
And if you would like to be a producer of the show and donate to us and get a shout out on the show, you can go to patreon.com/iusedtolikethisone and become part of our Patreon community. I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter and the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Thank you for listening, and join us next week when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One.